A lot to get to on a Thursday edition of Locked On Suns, coming off of a close but somehow very controversial win over the Toronto Raptors on the road for the Phoenix Suns. We'll break that game down, talk a little bit more about Cam Johnson, and close the show with the latest Suns trade rumors. Don't go anywhere. Locked On Suns coming up for you right now.
Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a contributor at Suns.com as well as Dime Magazine. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen every single day, for finding us on YouTube, where the channel is just a few days maybe away from 1,000 subscribers and a Kelly Oubre bobblehead giveaway. I'm going to keep the towel giveaway open for one more day. So if you guys have not already sent me proof that you subscribe to the channel, do that on Twitter at LockedOnPHXSuns, at BrendanKleen14. That's my personal account. You can email me. You can drop a comment below, whatever it might be. Thank you as well to everybody listening on your favorite podcast platform. But as I mentioned, quite a bit to get to today. Damon Allred is my guest. He is a writer at Bright Side of the Sun. Damon, you broke down, you recapped the Raptors game last night over at Bright Side of the Sun, and I guess we should probably start with the mascot thing. Do you have any just humongously important thoughts on this? It seems like it's mostly fun, and yet somehow Suns fans are finding a way to get kind of mad about the response to this. I'm not entirely following. What do you make of it? Is this just a blood feud forever now?
Yeah, I'm actually glad that we decided to wait a little bit to record, so that we're recording like a couple minutes after Book changes his Twitter profile picture to the mascot. And honestly, what a flex to just take something that everyone is hating on you for and turn it into a flex.
It really is. It would be like if he several years ago now, with the one-on-the open gym, do you double team, that whole controversy, if he had made Joakim Noah his profile picture at that time, I think that would have been pretty iconic. This is probably the next best thing. I don't really have the energy to do another conversation about why Booker tends to be the subject of this weird criticism, or why Suns fans continue to let it get to them, so we'll skip all of that. What I think I actually want to talk about here is the small ball that the Raptors were able to deploy against the Suns. I guess versatile ball might be a better way to put it, because they were actually anything but small. It was the size and the versatility on the wing and inside and even at the guard spots that the Raptors are known for, but really seem to stymie the Suns a little bit. So you had a few tidbits in your recap, including that the Suns turned the ball over a season high 20 times, that there were some good moments, I think you could say, where the Suns were switching themselves and did a pretty decent job. But on the whole, I don't think anybody came away from that game feeling awesome about what the Suns were able to do. So do you think this is something that we should still be worried about after the Clippers pose such a challenge, and we know this is the type of team that can really push the Suns?
Yeah, so I listened to your episode from yesterday, talking about how, like, there aren't many teams that can pose these kinds of problems. There aren't many teams that are going to play a guy like Chris Boucher 37 minutes, where it feels like they're playing a small ball lineup, because offensively that's what Boucher is. He doesn't play much inside. But on the defensive end, I mean, 16 rebounds is just an insane number off the bench, and 9 of them were offensive. So if we're going to go up against Chris Boucher in the playoffs, I'm going to be worried.
Hey, he's on the trade market. He might end up somewhere.
Yeah, he might end up here. That would be a small ball five for us. Yeah. But overall, there are just so many different weird ways that the Raptors play. They played which Champagne brother is it that's on the Raptors? Is it Justin? Julian. Yeah, Justin was playing a lot of the even one and two at different points.
Weirdest
of that game.
Box score ever for him, where he did nothing outside of 5 offensive rebounds. But you really felt it. Like, I think that I tend to, obviously you're piggybacking off of what I said in the recap, so clearly I agree with you. But I just tend to think that that's sort of unique, you know, even the Clippers, like, I don't know if there's two other, if there's one other team outside of those two in the league that really poses that type of challenge. I guess what I wonder is, will the struggle, like this time around, one, you have the Warriors who can kind of put together some semblance of that type of unit. And they've done, they really did that against the Suns in the most recent Christmas game, where Otto Porter and Gary Payton and some of these guys are really mucking things up, in addition to obviously Draymond. You know, do the Warriors take a little bit away from that? Do other opponents know that that's somewhat of a weakness now for the Suns? Like, this time around, are teams more ready to go after the Suns that way and maybe put out some lineups that, while maybe not their best lineups or their most default types of lineups, like, do the Suns need to worry that, you know, the, I don't know, the Lakers are more likely to play small this time around than they did the last time, or, you know, the Mavericks maybe play Porzingis at the five a little more and put out, you know, four other wings out there. Like, this, that's probably the worst case scenario, is that it just gets on film so much that teams are like, hey, this might be the way to beat the Suns.
Yeah, I think what it comes back to as well, and anytime you talk about small ball with the Suns, you have to bring up how DeAndre Ayton plays against it. And he's just frankly been uninspiring since coming back. I know he had a really good stretch to end the game where he had some nice defensive stops and hit some free throws down the stretch, but generally he just has not been punishing the smaller guys like he was a lot of the time in that Clippers series. And as far as, like, if the Lakers are going to play small, a Lakers small ball lineup probably includes Malik Monk and Avery Bradley and guys like that, and guys that I just think the Suns could target to death, like they did with Michael Porter Jr. and other defensive liabilities in last year's playoffs.
Luke Kennard. Yeah. I think that's all fair, and I probably lean in that direction. I just think it's hard to pull off, whereas theoretically you can say, yeah, the Suns have a weakness because they don't necessarily have that positional size at every single spot on the floor. DeAndre Ayton can be inconsistent, and really they... the Suns don't want to run offense through him, so even if he is engaged in playing well, we saw at times last season and in this season as well, like, when they overdo it and focus on him too much, that can be a problem. All that's well and good, but I just think you have to have the personnel to execute that, and unless somebody's really going to overhaul their whole roster at the deadline just to beat the Suns in that particular way, I do think the list of teams you're looking at who can damage them that way is probably pretty small. And as I said in yesterday's show too, you mentioned DeAndre Ayton and what he does to beat those small versatile lineups. But I also think, as much as that is a kryptonite in some ways for the Suns, they also have, you know, two pretty darn effective switch beaters, you know, guys who can just go get a shot. Like, yeah, you can put Pascal Siakam or OG Anunoby on Devin Booker or Chris Paul, but odds are they're going to get, you know, a 45% or so shot no matter what, despite that. And there's just not much that an opponent can really do about that. So it doesn't seem like we disagree. It seems like you are on the same page as me that this was not something to panic about. I feel like I've been saying that all year, but I think we kind of know what this team is, and we know what there is to worry about and what there isn't to worry about. I just don't really feel like this is in that first category.
Yeah, I think you're right, especially since we're not going to see the Raptors in the finals, probably, like, the amount of things that would have to happen for that to happen. But, like, the Heat is a team that does scare me in a lot of those same ways.
If Bam can be healthy, you know, they already showed what they can do sort of offensively to the Suns, and their defense wasn't really there. The Suns just missed shots in that game, I think. But, you know, if the Heat have Bam and PJ Tucker and Jimmy Butler and everybody healthy, they're there. And obviously
Kyle Lowry taking charges.
And obviously the Bucks, who don't even have Brooke Lopez right now, so their hand might be forced to go to those smaller wing heavy lineups with Giannis at the five, which we know, you know, that might be the single best unit in the entire league. So there are some out there, and it is something we know, but it's not new. And we know the Suns at least have answers. It's just about executing those answers and whether they continue to do that over the course of the season. So a nice checkpoint game, a nice game for them to stow away and have some film to learn from, frankly, and hopefully improve upon as the season goes on. We'll see the next time they do play one of those types of groups what it looks like. They haven't even played the Bucks this year, so that'll be a big test. But let's talk about Cam Johnson. He continues to be out with this ankle injury, but I don't think it'll be incredibly long that he's out, and I feel like this will become one of the predominant storylines of this season. What he will do, what is his role going to be, what does the offseason look like for him? I don't think it's too early to start thinking about that, so we'll get into it. It's also not too early to think about what comes after the NFL, because I know if you've all been betting all season long on the NFL, it can get kind of boring this time of the year. There's no college football, there's no NFL. It's everybody's favorite sport to bet on, but Prize Picks is your answer. You've been hearing us tell you about Prize Picks for months, and if you haven't signed up yet, this is the perfect time. They make it fun, they make it easy, and they're giving you extra money right now. So for a limited time, Prize Picks has an exclusive no-brainer offer for every single Locked On listener to get $50 for free if a player in your first Prize Picks entry scores a single point. Use the promo code NBA to take advantage. An exclusive offer available to Locked On listeners who use the code NBA. A reminder, Prize Picks, daily fantasy made easy. You pick 2 to 5 players in your lineup. You pick an over-under on their prop projection. So you can do points, assists, rebounds, threes. They have pretty much everything. You hit the over or the under there based on the player's projections, and you are just competing just like that. No opponent, no pool. You just hit, let's say, Mikal Bridges over on three-pointers made on Friday night. If he hits it, then you score, and that's how it works. Again, $50 free if anybody in your first Prize Picks lineup scores a single point, which, let's be honest, that is obviously going to happen if you know anything. Pick a player who plays, and I guarantee you they will score a point, and you will get that $50 straight to your account. Again, using that promo code NBA, promo code NBA, Prize Picks, daily fantasy made easy. Can't stop talking about Cam Johnson. I've been noticing sometimes if I talk about one person a lot in a row, I'll notice it when I go in to upload a new episode and I'm like, oh, that guy's name has been in the headline or the name of the show 3 times in a week or 5 times in a month or whatever it might be. Cam Johnson is on one of those streaks without question. Damon, you wrote about him at Bright Side of the Sun. He really should have timed this injury better. He seems to always have these problems at the worst times, whether it's the league getting shut down or it's COVID or it's injury, whatever it might be. Hopefully it doesn't keep him out long. But what were some of your observations about really his entire career? Because you went back to the beginning and watched back his basically best game of the year each of his 3 seasons and noticed some trends. What can you tell us?
Yeah, like you were saying, Monty Williams regrettably leaving Cam Johnson in too long that night, leading to the injury. But it seems like a minor thing, fingers crossed across the board. But yeah, the main thing over the past few years for Cam has just been expanding upon what he already does well, which is why in year one you see a lot of that stationary jump shot. And then in year two, you kind of start to see a little more dribbling and a little more independency, so to speak. And then in year three, that's when the creation is really starting to reveal itself. And like I shared a couple points, I'm just going to bring them up here as well. The two kind of benchmarks for how well he's playing right now, he has 19 games in a row of double digits, which is longer than the active streaks of Jason Tatum, DeAndre Ayton, Rudy Gobert. And then he has the longest active streak of at least 2 3-pointers made in the league. He's at 22 games for context. And I don't know if, did Fred hit a couple last night?
Yes, I would think
Fred
so.
Fred Van Vliet is up to 14.
He was reining it in last night. So I think I can safely say yes.
And then Seth Curry is 3rd at 9. So he's got quite a breathing room there on that streak. Mm-hmm. And he's just been really impressive getting it done in all sorts of ways.
So here's my question. First of all, the consistency stuff, when you really put it in words like that, is pretty, I mean, I just still don't feel like he's the type of guy that anyone outside of Phoenix would necessarily expect to see in a list like that. And I don't think even Suns fans necessarily realize, because he's a bench player, because this team is so deep, everybody seems to do it every single night. There's, you know, it could be campaign, it could be Devin Booker, you never quite know. But within all of that, there's this one player who actually does it every night. And it's been pretty remarkable to see. And it's making me wonder what the future looks like, not just with the contract, although, you know, we can get into that. You had some thoughts there in your piece, but what is the best case scenario this year, or with Cam Johnson sort of more broadly during his time in Phoenix? Like, is it that he plays this well, if not better and more complete of a game throughout the rest of the season, and the Suns, you know, compete for a title again, and then maybe they don't have the money to extend him and then they trade him? Or like, is the best case scenario that he plays so well that they make room for him maybe by trading Jay Crowder and Dario Saric away and maybe clearing that rot? Like, I don't know what it's one of these embarrassment of riches types of decisions that the Suns have to make. But I wonder, I'm sure you thought about that writing this and watching some of his old film and just seeing how well he developed. You kind of made the comparison, like, think of him as a younger player than he is, and this makes a little bit more sense. So if we expect him to continue to get better, like, what does the future really look like? And do you think that they can eventually keep him, and how big of a priority would you make that?
Yeah, I think it's really important to keep him around. And by the time his contract is up, the whole owner Sarver situation will hopefully have been solved by this offseason. I know I saw Dan Bickley at Arizona Sports talk about, he hears that it'll be done by the All-Star break, the investigation at least. Whether the league comes to a verdict or not by then, that's another story. But hopefully, by the time his negotiations come up, all that is resolved. And I think that it should be a priority to keep him. And I think that if it means going well into the tax, that that's fine, just because of how important he is and how much room he still has to grow. I think it was before the season that we were talking about his ceiling. And I think I made the comparison to Paul George with Cam. Yeah. And I still stand by that. You see a lot of it in his game now. In the
offensively.
Offensively.
Okay.
In the year three portion of my article that I wrote, I shared a possession where he gets some pick and roll ball handling action. And you really see a lot of the suddenness and ball handling that it takes to be great at pick and roll ball handling. And so I think that the more he does that, he's just going to get better and better at it. I think he's very capable of doing it regularly. I mentioned in the article that I'd still like to see more McHale ball handling and pick and rolls, but that's okay. For McHale and Cam Johnson to be your third and fourth best, and like if you throw campaign in there, could be even your fourth and fifth best pick and roll ball handlers. Like, that is elite. There is probably not a single other team in the NBA with a fourth best ball handler in the pick and roll as good as Cam or McHale. And so I just think the depth of options that you have as both of those guys really start to reach their ceiling even more, I think it's really important to keep Cam around.
Yeah, I feel similarly about his ceiling. I'm excited that we saw it. I thought early in the season, he, you know, people might remember he was pretty cold to start the year and then really just kind of caught fire, and he's back to what we expected, if not even a little bit better. That clip you had where he did get that pick and roll rep, he had like a little bit of a hang dribble and kind of used like his sense of timing and balance to get to his spot. It felt much more mature than I kind of think of him as. And obviously those moments are few and far between, but when you show that type of thing, you earn more opportunities to do it. And I would expect we get more of that from him as the season goes along. We know how dynamic his jumper is. He can do it off of movement. He gets, you know, these sets called for him that really are only occupied otherwise for Devin Booker, maybe Landry Shamet, whenever he is making his shots. But that package is just growing, and there is such a level of dynamicness to that package, and I'm excited excited to see what happens next. But I guess part of what I was getting at there too, Damon, is do you feel like they should be feeling pressure to increase his role at all? Like, do you think that we're going to get to a point where Jay Crowder is inhibiting his growth? Or that's kind of sounds ridiculous, but I'm just so intrigued by what he can be that I kind of feel like you want to put as many, like, let him reach as high as he can. And maybe it's him starting, maybe eventually it's not, there's no need for Crowder in there. What do you think of that? And do you feel like he's in for a bigger role as this team grows?
Down the line, yeah, I do think Crowder does inhibit Cam a little bit. But as far as the immediate future, I think that there's a lot of cases where starting Crowder and finishing with Cam, like they did a lot of the time toward the end of last season and a few times already this season, I think that that's the best course of action for right now, just because I like the sort of change of pace that playing with Cam brings, so that like when he comes off the bench, the Suns are switching gears. It's like a pitcher in baseball throwing a changeup after playing one way the whole game. And I just think it's really important that they keep that in their bag for right now, at least. Maybe when Cam becomes even more dynamic, he can shift into that starting spot like next season, and then Crowder can be used as a trade piece, because I think next year is Crowder's last year, right? So
yes,
having an expiring, yeah, having that expiring could become really valuable at that deadline.
Yeah, last word on that in terms of trades and offensive or offseason flexibility. I think something I haven't said on the show, but that I think is not being talked about enough, is that the Suns are in an incredible position to make a deal next offseason. You have Landry Shamet, whose contract is right in that sweet spot that's stackable to make make trades work from a contract perspective. You have Crowder and Saric, who are both going to be expiring. And then, you know, not that anyone's rooting for it, and I'm not trying to open a big can of worms here, but you obviously have the elephant in the room of DeAndre Ayton's contract and free agency situation there as well. Like, if the Suns want to get in on something big, whether it includes Cam or not, that opportunity is definitely going to be there for them if they would like to pursue it. So lots to think about, and obviously it's so fluid. It's part of what's cool about the regular season is you learn stuff and you adjust expectations and the situation of the team changes. I think that's been the number one reason why, for the Suns at least this season, is Cam Johnson really blossoming. Let's stick at the forward spot, though. Jalen Smith, somebody who did not blossom, has not quite blossomed like we all may have hoped, is potentially in talks for a trade, and Boston is the latest landing spot to come up. So let's hit on that really quickly to close the show. First, though, Bet Online wishing you a happy new betting year and wishing Cardinals fans the opportunity to earn some money on Kyler Murray's first playoff game. If that sounds like you, then Bet Online is your one-stop shop for all of your sports wagering needs, not only in January to start the new year, but throughout 2022. They are celebrating the new year as well with a new and updated mobile interface and desktop site. So head to betonline.ag or their mobile app. Make an account today. And when you do, don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when you make your first deposit to get a 50% welcome bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDON when you make your first deposit to get a 50% welcome bonus straight to your account from the football playoffs and Kyler's first time in the NFL playoffs to the basketball regular season and even your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available in the new year at BetOnline. BetOnline, where the game starts. Damon, you turned my attention to this just before we recorded. I admittedly missed it. Michael Scotto has to stop reporting on his podcast. It's too hard for those of us who just sit on Twitter all day to keep up, but he is, of course, over at Hoops Hype, and he does a good job. It's just, it stresses me out. But here we go. Here's what he said. He said, I've, quote, also heard former lottery pick Aaron Nesmith and guard Dennis Schroeder are available in Boston. They've made several calls doing due diligence, including to Phoenix, regarding Jalen Smith's availability. So that is the most firm connection to a specific team with regard to sticks that we've heard since San Antonio back during really the summer time. So one, have your feelings about a Jalen Smith trade changed in terms of what he's worth or how much of a hurry the Suns should be in to trade him versus maybe trying to keep him? And what do you think of the Celtics idea there? Are there any trades with the Celtics that excite you?
So as far as Jalen's trade market, I really have a really hard time judging what that looks like. I get the interest from Boston. He seems like a guy that would really fit there. He seems to me just like a worse version of Robert Williams and with some of that jump shooting added. So I get why they want to look into that a little bit. Michael Scotto also reported that they were looking into Jeff Green as well with the Nuggets.
The return.
Yeah. Seems like he's been with every team. Now he's going to go to Boston again. A co-writer of mine over at Brightside, Rod Catano, brought up how with the salaries involved, it would work for the Suns to add Payton and Payne into that trade with Smith if they want to get back Schroeder and Nesmith, which is a trade that kind of makes sense to me.
Do you think they would trade Cam Payne?
I don't know if they would, but just because of Monty's affinity for him and kind of feels like a prized passion of James Jones that, like, this is our reclamation project. Yeah. But that is something that does make a little bit sense to me, just as far as Schroeder would be like a really solid third guard on a playoff team, I think. And just that extra added bench shooting of Aaron Nesmith. He's also an okay defender. So I really liked him coming out of college too. He had a really solid second season at Vanderbilt. So
yeah, checks a lot of the boxes for the types of players that the Suns would target. Comes from a pretty decent program, playing under Jerry Stackhouse, at least just for one season, makes a lot of his shots, has size. I think he was somebody that I talked about a lot on the podcast. Well, I only had the podcast hosting duties for like a week before that draft, but maybe more accurately, I wrote a lot about him back then, and I think he still makes a lot of sense. So that one, not a surprise that, you know, maybe those names would come up together, either because it's real or just because maybe the agents who are talking to Michael Scotto said, yeah, they might like, that sounds like the type of guy they would like. Very much in the Cam Johnson mold. I personally don't love Dennis Schroeder. I don't know how much interest the Suns would realistically have there. I don't know if that's quite the name to look at. I think it's more likely to me that one of those young Celtics players, maybe Peyton Pritchard, Romeo Langford also in there. I think Langford probably has the most value of the three. Swap out the young players who aren't working out in their environment type of deal. We see those from time to time. So that seems possible to me. And I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if we heard more about this. What do you think in general, though? Because the sticks thing seems so obvious. I think that's hurting the leverage here for sure, that the Suns kind of know, or that the opposing teams know that the Suns really need to get rid of him. They already signaled their intention to get rid of him by declining the option. So I don't know what value they can really look at there, but I just can't shake the feeling that James Jones is not going to, that he's not going to be too patient. Like, I think if he sees an opportunity here, like you bringing up campaign getting traded isn't crazy to me. And I know you said it was more Rod that had brought that up, but as much as I think fans are attached to a lot of these guys, like, the league feels pretty wide open, aside from the fact that the Warriors are a nice story. Like, they're not really rampaging through the NBA right now. They've been pretty bad on offense for a couple of weeks now. Like, I think if Jones senses that, he's going to look pretty big. That seems to be your vibe too. Like, this, we should be thinking a little bigger maybe.
I would certainly be open to it. I do think that if there's any trade that comes up that a team is willing to make for Smith, that you should just accept it if it brings you any positive value, regardless in the short term. but I'd be open to bigger things. I don't know if they have necessarily coveted pieces that would make something like that happen, or really if there's a big name guy on the market that would fit here, to be honest. Because I know
not a big
Jeremy
name.
Yeah, but, I know Jeremy Grant has been brought up, and sure, that's not a fit I like. I would love Sabonis, but I think there's no way that they have the assets unless they want to get into like territory of future picks and pick swaps, that sort of deal. But yeah.
Yeah, it's, I don't love either fit. I don't really love the Sabonis fit either. I think you want he just isn't really enough of a two-way player to me. And he sort of, to me, becomes like a backup big man, which, at least for the way that this team wants to play and the way that this roster is constructed. So I tend to agree there might not be a big man or a big name, I mean, available this year. But I don't even mean a star player. I just mean bigger than Jalen Smith, bigger than a Jalen Smith trade. I think that's just been where our attention has been focused for such a long time now that I think it just could be more than that. Maybe they find something with Dario Šarić. Maybe they, I don't know. It would be hard for me to imagine, but, you know, Jay Crowder, if there's a deal there, if I don't think their first round pick will be off the table at all, like that mid tier type
Cam
of guy.
Reddish?
Sure.
Like Cam Reddish sort of guy. I'd
sure.
Be open to
I mean,
Cam
he's
Reddish.
A little young. I don't know if he's an impact guy, but like this John Collins stuff lately, like, I don't know, maybe that, you know, I just think we shouldn't assume that the Suns are just a fixed product necessarily, because as much as you could say, look, they ran it back and they're right at the top of the league, I also think that there's a part of you that could say, hey, well, the league's wide open. They're already this good. Maybe they can get 10% better and feel even better about things. So it just, you know, hearing the Celtics and just, I guess, maybe hearing that the Suns are still poking reminded me, like, hey, James Jones tends to move in silence for the most part, and maybe I'm just mentally preparing myself, but also as a byproduct of that, maybe readying the folks listening and watching here to kind of, hey, this might not be the only, 'cause they have six freaking centers. There's no way this is, I just can't imagine that this is the roster in April.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see either of Kaminsky or Šarić moved, to be honest. I'm still keeping an eye or two over in San Antonio at Thad Young, but I wonder if there are the pieces to make that happen unless they want to throw in a first down the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, so we're less than a month away. Just keep an eye out. Keep your ears open, Suns fans, I guess I'm saying. Maybe that's not the most provocative take. I don't have a big constructed trade ready to screenshot and throw up here on the video screen and walk you through it with a whiteboard, but I do think it's worth thinking about and maybe not getting too married to these players who we've all obviously enjoyed watching. But that'll wrap us up. We have one more show coming tomorrow with Aaron Edwards of Crooked Media. Keep it right here. Subscribe if you have not already. Get in on this towel giveaway. Get in on the Kelly Oubre giveaway. Ride the wave. We are just a couple of months away from the stretch run of the season into the playoffs. I can't wait. We're already chomping at the bit with these trades and everything else, so obviously the rest of the season will be a ton of fun. You can read Damon's work at Bright Side of the Sun. You can follow him, as it says on the screen here, at I Am Damon Allred, and we will talk to you guys tomorrow.